Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Tom, before we go to you, I really think, Sandy, that the thought of having a true dialogue with someone who could have a true dialogue without flying off the handle is worthy of addressing the issues and the divide between the progressives and the conservatives.
Well, I think for sure, and I think quite frankly that much like in a classroom, I think the people in the classroom have to decide that they want to participate in the classroom in a way that's constructive. I think CJ could demonstrate that by being just changing the,
but he's proven that he can't.
I'll never say never, but my view is that we need to try to demonstrate in our show at least that the world is not all about just partisan expressions of party line and talking points. That it's actually wise for us to identify issues, to talk about them, and to try and cogitate together about what it is we're talking about. We don't have to walk away from that conversation agreeing with one another, but we ought to at least walk away having learned more about what the other person thinks.
You know, Sandy, anybody who's listened to our show doesn't hear talking points. And I know because I've listened to, many shows, and especially those on the right, and it's not coincidental that whether it's local or national, those people are talking about the same thing, every day. It's the same thing that what are the chances that the national talk hosts are going to be talking about the same thing that the local talk hosts are talking about? It's because they've been given talking points and they follow those. That doesn't happen with us. And so it doesn't happen with this station. That's the difference. Let's go to Tom. Hey, Tom, thanks for holding, man. You say what?
Hey, Earl, first off, we the people, all of us, ultimately are the government. Sandy, I guess I'm going to call you this right now, but you are a complete, what they would call, liberal. What I mean by that.
Oh, and you don't mean that. That's not a positive expression as far as you're concerned.
Well, not in terms of this topic, because the problem is you have to have two parties or two people that are coming into a conversation with some honesty in order for there to actually be any type of communication. Look, we have over thousands and thousands of right-wing radio out there that are doing and blowing these talking points out. It's probably one of the reasons why Mandela Barnes is a little bit behind and Tony Evers is a little bit behind.
Well, are you suggesting that I ought to be using talking points, or are you just suggesting that I'm gullible enough to be to believe that we might be able to have conversations that would be founded on what you just described? Does that make me a liberal?
Well, what I would say is this. When you're talking about the radio, you might be being a little bit of Pollyannish because of the fact that I can talk to a conservative outside of a radio thing that gets broadcast all over the place, and I can actually have a conversation with them. And maybe that's the way it is with CJ when you actually get with them one-on-one. But when you only have a few minutes to talk, all the Republicans do is talk off their talking points. They say basically Democrats are soft on crime. If you really believe that I'd want my loved ones to get killed, do you really believe that I want people just to get out of jail free on murderous type charges like they talk about? I mean, they act like they're in this totally different world than we live. We care about our families. I mean, I am an FDR Democrat. That's what I am. I believe in a return on investment for the society as a whole. If that's socialistic, call me socialistic. But the whole point of us thinking that we're going to get anywhere was people that are coming to the conversation with their own talking points and coming to the conversation with just another way to be able to trumpet out the talking points that they've heard from everywhere else. We're kidding ourselves.
Okay, well, let's
get some real conservatives that can call up and actually have,
well,
like,
sure.
Dave has actually come a little bit of a wave.
Well, Tom, just a minute. We'd like to do that, and you know we're inviting that, but I'm unwilling to participate in something that's like an intellectual World Wrestling Federation concept where I talk talking points and they talk talking points. So I don't know what you were describing me as, but I don't think that the response to talking points ought to be a bunch of talking points. I think the response.
Right,
I think what we need to do is talk to the people, try to elucidate, talk to people in a sensible way, and provide them with information, and provide them with the at least the demonstrable facts, and as well the arguments that might support a particular response to those facts. All of that is fair game, and that's
Sandy. I agree with you.
Okay,
I agree with you in terms of the intellectualism that we're talking about, and actually being able to have a conversation. But the other side's got to come to it with an honest discussion as well. I mean, all they're talking about is their little talking points about pipeline, a wall, immigration,
yeah,
all these different things.
No, absolutely.
That's all they talk about.
But I think it's up to us to have a rational discussion that points out the fallacies of thinking like that.
How can you have a rational? How can you have a rationalization when their whole thing is, I just want to own the libs? All I want to do is own the libs. That's what they say.
Own the what?
And you know what?
Libs.
Own the libs.
Oh, the liberals.
Own the liberals.
Oh, well.
That's their big big thing.
That's the strategy. And the liberals, we have strategy. I mean, liberals have strategies as well, I'm sure. But I'm not talking about...
I think our strategy is infrastructure, and our strategy is having child care for children.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, I think our strategy in 2016 was to appeal to an ethnic quilt patchwork, and I think that failed. And I think our strategy has been a variety of things in terms of political strategies. I'm not interested in discussing political strategies. I think we ought to talk about the meat of what the people in this country need to think about.
Sandy, I agree with you. Then we have to talk policy. Then we have to talk policy.
Well, that's what we're doing here.
We have to talk about how is it that you feel about immigration? How is it that you feel about the fact that the Wisconsin legislature has not shown up for work since last year in March? And isn't going to show up for the rest of the year, and they're getting paid over $65,000 a year. They're the lazy bums. They're the ones that are supposed to bring policy to the people, and they're not doing anything. Meanwhile, you got more money going in towards against Mandela Barnes and Tony Evers because of money in politics, and these people are really wanting to talk about what's going to bring us forward. But we can't just let this lay when they call Mandela. You know, he's the one that
I definitely agree, and I think that one of the things to be discussed is why in the world is it pertinent in an ad about Mandela Barnes to talk about bail policy or parole?
Which has nothing to do with him.
Yeah, a senator has nothing to do with that process other than the potential passage of laws which aren't under consideration at the U.S. Congress. So, you know, it's, yes, we need to talk about
that. Russian Ron wants to take away our Social Security. Russian Ron wants to take away our Social Security. He wants every year for it to be where it's on the table, Social Security, and earned benefits. I mean, we're talking about the fact that we are in a place right now in this country, and I am also concerned, Earl, of what's going on in Ukraine and Russia and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, we actually have senators that actually were working for the Russians July 4th, 2018 with Ron Johnson. I mean, we've got to be able to win the next election so we can actually break the filibuster, so we can actually bring some good policy forward for the country. And I just think that right now, these guys don't care about anything but power and winning elections. And, you know, we're sitting here like Lucy with a football. We're sitting here like the Democrats do, which is we're not hitting back. We're not saying That is not true.
Well, I don't know if you're suggesting that this show ought to do that, but there's definitely places for that to be done. That is in the political arena. I just don't necessarily agree that.
I would love to do it the way that you want to do it, Sandy. I'm just saying to you that there's so much right wing talk radio out there. There's corporate media that even goes with it more. That it's one of those things that we on the progressive left don't have a lot of places to actually not talk talking points, but actually talk about policy. And if they're not going to be honest and come on the radio with some honesty, then you know what? We need some people that are going to.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Got to go to a break. Okay. Now, I guess, so Sandy, it clearly is frustrating, to say the least.
Well, you see, Tom demonstrates, again, though, how polarized we are, because Tom is very fearful and angry about the right. And maybe this is all justified now, because maybe the positions of the two parties have become so polarized and different that it's probably appropriate to be fearful about that side getting in power. I do have a serious concern about if the Trump version of republicanism gains control of this country. I have serious worries about the extent to which America, as we know it and love it, would continue to persist, and it would become a place that I might find very uncomfortable to live in. So I'm one of those people. I've gotten there in our political process. But how did our political process get to this point?
You know, Sandy, I'll respond on the other side. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. It's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. You know, Sandy, the more you listen to it, and I know that there are people who are listening now who are saying, you know, this is ridiculous, that it seems like just arguments and everything's an argument. And so I'm tired of hearing the argument. I don't care what side of it, you know. But you know, there are Democrats who, progressives and centrist Democrats, who basically can't talk to one another either.
Well, I mean, you know, that's why, you know, when Tom called me a liberal, I knew that liberal is a swear word as well amongst progressives, because the view is that liberal Democrats have failed to accomplish anything that needs to be accomplished, and that the progressive movement is there to supplant this sort of eunuch liberalism in the Democratic Party, and to come in with real power and effort. So, but my view is that that what we need is some pressure release valves, and that what we have now is the notion that either the progressives or the centrists will control the Democratic Party. So it puts them at odds with one another. But if we had a centrist party and a progressive party, the two parties can play nicely with one another. And in the parliamentary system, at least, they ultimately have to figure out the ways in which they want to cooperate with one another to accomplish jointly held aims. And it has worked quite well in parliamentary processes. Now, it is true that in some countries like Italy, the parliamentary process can end up with a party that is viewed as sort of a fringe party getting a surprisingly large vote, and then that creates some reaction to it. But that has happened over the years in places, and the pendulum swings. In our country, because of our two-party system, we've got these parties that are increasingly controlled by the outer edge of the party because they represent a greater than majority headcount in the party, but they're a minority, a significant minority in the country. So we've got these parties that don't even represent all of their participants.
You know, Sandy, it's not just in this country. That divide between, you just talked about it earlier.
In Brazil. Yeah.
A conservative party. And you can see that and follow that reasoning all over many parts of the earth.
Yeah, I think places that have only two parties or a very limited number of parties tend to have this kind of friction more than places that have multiple parties, where they've gotten used to playing with one another in some process. So most of European democracies are parliamentary democracies, and most of them have multiple parties, and the multiple parties house the people who think alike. And so if you're a conservative, then you're in the conservative party. If you're a super right-wing conservative, you might be in the super right-wing Christian conservative party, or whatever, however they denominate themselves. People then stand for what they stand for. People can see it and they understand it.
So the real fear, long-term fear to me, Sandy, is that if there was an entity that would possibly be able to break the loggerheads, it would have been through some form of religion. And that if you believed in that and your belief in a higher power, that you would be able to put what's in the best interest of everybody ahead of all the other things.
Well, Rex Reed,
but now we've got that component is at the apex.
Well, Rex Reed sort of took care of that. Reed was and when the conservative right evangelical movement in the country decided to form an alliance with the conservative Republicans, and the Republicans found out how beneficial that was, we began to develop this social issue litmuses that was being driven by the evangelicals. So instead of it being an outlook of we're going to improve the lot of all mankind, it began to be, from a religious political standpoint, a pursuit of particular religious issues, which has come down to primarily abortion, but also gay rights and some social issues that don't really relate in the ways that you're talking about to the broad interests of America.
You know, Sandy, your point is just right on. Because if we don't have that opportunity anymore where we can a come to Jesus moment, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, where people could both be Democrat or Republicans, but we're coming to Jesus and the Bible, and which is what we used to be able to, because people believed in the Bible and they believed in Jesus and they believe. I'm talking about, you know, decades ago. And so people, even though they had differences, they could say, well, you know, we're Christians and so this is what the book says and we have to learn to work together. That's not there anymore, right?
Well,
so there's nowhere you can't go there now.
Well, for some reason, because I think at least a portion of the religious movement decided to make some social issues so fundamental. And abortion was the first one that was the lightning rod. Now there's some others. You know, the whole LGBTQ debate is really a debate between the religious activists in, and everyone else. And the question is, you know, how much power do they hold? And they are a pretty powerful political element, but they aren't an element that's there to bring us all together.
No, but then you've got a much broader swath of people who are not affiliated with religion anymore. They've been turned off by that. And so you can't have that part of it where you can bring that together to even begin to have a constructive conversation. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And I don't know, we kind of disappeared from Facebook, but I guess it'll pop back up. You know, Sandy, we can talk about, you know, the differences and the things that happen on a national level, but you always hear all politics are local. And so my concern is always with my city where I live and what it's faced with and how difficult things are for those of us who live in the city. And that it, at some point these things are out of the control of the people who live in our city. And yet, you know, as you've heard people, as we've heard people say, you know, you got $5 billion just lying around at the state level, and we can't get, this is all broken. The whole system is broken. Instead of being able to say, well, we've got $5 billion laying around at the state level, and people need are in need in the state. We should be, you know, we should be working as representative government. And if the democracy was real and really worked the way it's supposed to work in a representative government, then our elected officials should be doing what they should be doing right now and working towards doing the people's business and work. Not that they have been away in the state since March and won't come back until you know, next year. And yet people are struggling and suffering, and the business of the people is not being conducted. So this whole thing about, you know, we're on this side of the equation, they're on that side of it. If we're not talking, you know, we'll never be able to even address what the people's needs are. And that's kind of what all this is, Sandy. The people are lost in this, right?
I think so, and I think what has been lost over time too has been the capacity of government to actually do what government ought to do. I mean, the government's gotten good at handing money back to people, you know, so we've end up with all these government programs that end up being a rapid deployment of money to people, which is nice, but you know, in a government that actually has safety nets and is doing things that are investments in the people, we would have programs and people conducting programs that we could talk about as to things that we would actually do with the money. So that, you know, if we had child daycare programs in place and we were talking about improving the budgets for child daycare so they could do a better job, people would have a fundamental understanding of how that money is going to be deployed. But what we have now, Because ever since Grover Norquist and Reagan, government has become something that no one trusts and no one believes in, and the government is constantly being strangled for money, and we don't have processes, we don't have programs in place that are actually doing things. We don't have people out there advocating and explaining what it is that will be done with the money, which makes it harder to shake that money loose. Now, granted, right now what's broken in Wisconsin is the willingness of the legislature to even convene to listen to discussion about how the $5 billion that's sitting in a till would be deployed to whether it gets sent back to people or whether it gets deployed in programs. But if we had a better government in place that had actual programs and people conducting the programs, we'd have people coming forth explaining the programmatic uses that would be made of that money. There's none of that in the paper.
So let's talk about just how insane all of this is. Every year it's the same thing, even on the federal level, the budget. We're worried about shutting down the government. We're $30 trillion in debt. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you mean shutting down the government? We're $30 trillion in debt. That means Democrats and Republicans the last time I checked, right? Well, 25 trillion of it is Democrats and 5 trillion of it is Republicans. It's none of that foolishness.
No, and in fact, I don't think Republicans would like to do the evaluation of how much of the debt was accomplished under one party.
I know, but it really doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. Well, we have a huge debt, and we also have this capacity to operate the government, and all we've got is political leverage that's
right.
Associated with this annual requirement that we enact the legislation necessary to increase the size of the national debt so that we can accomplish the next year of deficit that has been ongoing every year, except I think two under Clinton, every year since World War II. So, what we're talking about here is the game of politics, and the game of politics in the United States has caused our governmental process to be broken.
You know, Sandy, that's it. The game. And I used to always say to people who would say to me, who are in politics, well, you got to know how to play the game. And I'm like, game? It's not a game. And anybody who believes it's a game, Sandy, is at the root of why we are where we are now.
Absolutely. And that is the problem. Both parties have decided that their power and being in power is the fundamentally important thing, that it's the most fundamental thing. And the reason they've been able to decide that is they have decided that the other side is such a danger that the ends justify the means, that we, the Republican Party, must stay in power because otherwise those guys will gain power and destroy the government, and the other side has decided the same thing. And that game, unfortunately, has been quite effectively played by the conservatives. It's more effectively played by them than it is the liberals, but both sides are playing the game. I would just say that one side is better coached than the other. But, you know, it's a blood sport. That's what it is. You know, this game is a blood sport, and they're playing with the blood of Tom, Dick, and Mary.
Yes. I mean, Sandy, that's what's at the root of all of it, and that's what frustrates me the most, is because I see people whose lives are in the balance because of this, and anybody who sees it from the perspective of a game should be gone.
Yeah.
I don't care, Democrat or Republican, they are not the kind of people who we should have in the representative government. If we live in the representative government, then the people's lone job should be to represent the people who put them there and do what's in the best interest of them, right? I mean, at the root of all of it, the voters. That's what this should be about. Not that you've forgotten the voter. And in this process, we've completely forgotten the voter.
Well, it would be interesting. I'm sitting here thinking, God, if I was in college again and going to graduate school, I think I'd go to get a graduate degree in political science and conduct some massive mega data analysis of the extent to which political debate in various countries is more focused on actual policies than it is on name-calling, mud mudslinging and this sort of power politics. Because clearly, in the U.S., very little of the political debate is actually focused on fundamental policies. It's focused on snapshot and very shortened versions of a policy that don't have anything to do with reality. It has to do with painting a particular notion of a policy that fits into either this conservative or liberal framework. And I think in other countries, with particularly those with multiple parties, there is far more discussion of concrete policy. But I'd be interested, I challenge any listener out there who's going to graduate school, do your thesis on doing a mega data analysis of what is conducted in the debates in various countries other than the United States, because it might be a way of figuring out, taking the temperature of the design of the political architecture in a country that might result in something more positive than we have in America.
You know, Sandy, having part of getting older that is beneficial is that you've lived a little while and you've seen some things. For instance, who was it? It was under Reagan. What was the budget deficit? $3 trillion. And they were talking about that like it was the end of the world. The budget deficit.
Well, it wouldn't have been $3 trillion, because trillions were that. Those were recent, recent records that were set, but they were very big. They were setting records for post World War II deficits,
right? So during
the Reagan administration,
yeah, but,
and they did during numerous Republican administrations.
So we can go Bill Clinton. Then it might have been.
Clinton had two positive. He had two surplus years.
But it was a number that was nowhere near $30 trillion. Okay.
Well, you're talking about the national debt.
The national debt.
Yes, I'm sorry.
And so we went from $3 trillion not that long ago, and we were talking about, I remember the first conversation, we're going to have $1 trillion national debt.
Well, here's the deal when you look at the national debt and when it was incurred and how it was incurred. You know, there was a substantial amount of national debt incurred during the Obama administrations.
To
dig us out of. And so those were investments to try to avoid unemployment, to try to avoid a recession. And they were investments that were being made in a bipartisan manner in terms of the votes to try and correct the economy into a situation of positive growth. So it was sort of investment-like, okay? The deficit that was incurred in the Trump administration, the massive one that was incurred after the big tax reduction, was hardly based on an investment. Now, I guess the Republicans would suggest that the change in the depreciation, taxation levels, et cetera, were efforts to create and foster investment in the private sector. But the fact is that there is no evidence that occurred, and it was being done on an economic basis that wasn't based on any sort of empirical analysis.
So, Sandy, for those of us who don't know, who do we owe the national debt to? Because I think that's part of, certainly a percentage of it we owe to other nations, but the majority of that debt we owe to American.
Well, we owe it to people who hold U.S. Treasury debt instruments, and a lot of those are held by foreigners because of the fact that our dollar is the international exchange, the primary source of international exchange and transactions, and so being the world currency, lots of people want to hold our debt instruments as ways to put their cash into a piggy bank for a while. But yes, it's owned by American entities and investors as well as foreign entities.
So the question becomes then, Sandy, if we owe that national debt to people, and is that why it just keeps accruing and we're not so concerned like if we owed it to some other nation and then they would call in that debt?
Well,
is there ever any chance that this debt can be called in?
Well, it doesn't get called, but but it can, you know, as interest inflation goes up, interest rates go up, and the cost of servicing the debt goes up, and at some point it creates such a burden on our economy that it becomes a very inflationary pressure.
Well, $30 trillion, if we're not there yet.
Well, if our, that's the whole this whole Keynesian economics and the modern economics who look, even the conservatives have begun to say, well, national debt isn't really a problem, and it's a very convenient theory to have if politically you're building up big national debts. But the fact is that if, for instance, you have a mortgage and your mortgage is $80,000 and you've got an income of $150,000 a year, you can afford to carry that mortgage, and you could carry that mortgage every year for the rest of your life, and you'd be just fine. And if your income goes up to $400,000, you could carry a mortgage that's $120,000 and you'd be just fine.
Right.
And so that's kind of, that's a simplistic way of looking at our national debt.
Sandy, hold the thought. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Let's go to Don. Hey, Don, how you doing?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. I got listening to your conversation, and it does seem like our democracy is really in trouble. I was just wondering if we could institute a couple things that would help our democracy. Any just a thought here. If we could get like maybe overturn the Citizens United. And number two, if we could have what they call a term limits for our politicians, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Hey, Don, let me ask you this. You don't have to go off the air first. If you're a politician and you enjoy your control and your power, and the only way that can be overturned is for you and your colleagues to vote to cut your own throats. Do you think that's going to happen? The only way that...
Well, then our democracy is not going to work if you think like that.
Well, no, it's not thinking like that. Who can overturn? Who can... So Don, who is going to be able to say term limits are no good? Who has the power to do that?
Well, doesn't the Senate and the House have
they're not going to.
How come they can vote them and their parties are together?
They're not going to cut their own throats.
Well, then they're cutting. Then look, the guy from L.A. Tom says, the people are the government. We're paying their salaries.
I'll let Sandy respond.
So,
go ahead.
So shouldn't they be trying to solve problems? Right now, the way you guys discuss it, and I kind of agree with you, it sounds like we're getting, especially here in Wisconsin, it sounds like we're getting screwed by both parties. If you really want to look at it, you know, when you don't want to talk to each other, well, then democracy is out the window. You have to communicate. Look what's happening between the governor of Florida and Joe Biden. They're actually talking to one another. That's a breath of fresh air, don't you think?
That's because the governor, had there not been the hurricane, they wouldn't be talking.
Someone came knocking at the door with a gun.
I see your point, fellas. I'm not arguing that.
Well,
I believe
my,
I believe
my,
it. Oh, sorry.
That's okay. My view is that I agree that pragmatics tells me that term limits aren't going to get enacted, and I'm not sure exactly what the term limit ought to be, because to say that someone should only be in office one term would be too short, because you don't even learn how to be in office before you're done.
How about
if you say two terms, But I think multiple parties and having the position that in the locales in which people run, they would run from the standpoint of multiple parties, would create a much greater dialogue, and you'd have much more policy discussion
Let's face it. When you get like in Supreme Court, why should you have someone running around almost 100 years old that can barely walk? Now, come on now. There should be some kind of limitation either. And not only that, what I can't understand is with these politicians. Now, you know, if I want to have a job and I apply for a job, they usually ask you, what's your experience? What's your qualifications? Well, politics, they can be like Marjorie Taylor Greene. Do you think she's equipped to be? I mean, she shouldn't. I mean, someone that says that.
Well, somebody voted. People voted for her.
Dan, I think the issue is that.
Well, yeah, but because if you don't put people up that are qualified, you're going to have this.
Democracy is a system that that protects many kinds of rights, but it is by definition messy, and it is not subject to rational control from a third party or from a committee of third party rational people. So we can have a discussion about what would be rational, but ultimately there's a nomination process and a voting process, and that's what ends up electing folks. There's always been in the American legislature, in the Senate and the House of Representatives, some crackpots. And in fact, Wisconsin contributed to those crackpots. We had a guy named Joe McCarthy that we elected out of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm
that
just
was
saying.
He was an alcoholic.
Well, I don't know what he was, but he was definitely
He died from a liver. Cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
And that comes from drinking too much alcohol.
Oh.
Well, you know, there are some who will say...
Well, I mean, that was established. The guy drank like a fish.
There are some who will say Donald Trump is a crackpot. But, again, people elect
him. I think he's insane.
But I'm saying, if you live in a representative government, which is what we do, then the people get to vote for who it is they support.
Well,
that's this democracy that we live in.
Well, that's how can you call it democracy when one like here in the state, if this isn't changed, Milwaukee is going to have to file for bankruptcy.
So you're asking me?
You're going to have to because we can't afford police.
I know, but Don,
we're cutting off our workforce.
Yet
you're sitting on $5 billion,
Don,
talk to each other.
Don, you asked me why I call it a democracy. I didn't create that. That's what they tell me. It's a democracy.
That, right? I know.
They tell me it's a democracy.
What I'm trying to do is here, if we can have a civil, and I believe in that, that is the key to democracy. If you don't, these candidates, I mean, it's pathetic. They don't even want to debate each other.
I know.
Well,
thank you.
We got to go. It's the end of the show.
Okay. Goodbye.
Hey, Don, thank you very much.
Thank you for taking my call.
You know, Sandy, trying to set something in motion where we can have an intellectual conversation about what's wrong and what's going on in the country is a great thing, and the differences. Because after it's all said and done, that's the only thing that's going to be able to...
But what we have to move away from, and what's clear, it's going to be very, very difficult, even from the last caller, it's clear. We've got to get away from arm-waving and finger-pointing to actual discussion about stuff. And I think the way to start that would be to start to see if we can reach agreement on what the problems are in the country, and then figure out if we can address them.
All right, we got to go. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Connor. We'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.